Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 62, recorded Thursday, February 28th, 2008. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler, it's more about the journey than the destination, two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast, the evolution of connectivity and return of the travel agent. This week, I'm coming to you from the Newark Liberty Airport Marriott, right smack dab in the middle of some witch's brew of access roads in the center of Newark Airport. It's been a while since I've recorded on the road. I'll tell you, lately it just seems I've been running as hard as I can when I'm out of town without really a whole lot of time to do anything other than work. Last week, I did 2 days in Orlando for a business conference, left Chicago at 6:30 Monday morning, and caught the 6:15 flight back Wednesday morning. In between, I was jammed with meetings, presentations, and business meals. Yesterday, I was on a day trip down to Huntsville, Alabama, which really meant catching the first Southwest flight down to Nashville, driving 2 hours down I-65, taking an early afternoon meeting, driving 2 hours back up I-65, and then catching the last flight of the evening back up to Chicago. And now today, I'm on an overnight trip to lovely Newark for a meeting tomorrow morning somewhere in the wilds of North Jersey. I don't know. I don't have time, it seems, for much more than just sort of sleeping and showering. Now, my trip to Orlando at the beginning of last week just reminded me again why I hate going to Disney World on business. As I've said in the past, Disney can be a great family experience, a great tourism experience, but it's a really lousy business travel experience. I arrived Monday at the Contemporary Resort, that's the hotel with a monorail running through it, at about 11:30, noon, sometime like that. And the conference was starting at 1 p.m. My room wasn't available yet, and I had to chase around like two or three places marked bell service before I could find someone who would check my bag. Now, you know, compare this to, I show up in New York at the Court there in Midtown. You know, I get into the W at like 11 o'clock in the morning. I walk up and boom, my room is ready. I've got a room there. They give me the key. I go up, I drop my bags. I actually take a couple of phone calls and then I go off to my client. But here at 2 p.m., still no rooms, and so now I've got to hunt to find a place to take a conference call, you know. And again, like I said, at most hotels, this isn't a problem. However, at a Disney hotel, finding a spot without families with small children passing by, yelling at the top of their lungs, "Look, there's Mickey," that's a little tough. And again, I mean, no knock against the families or their kids, though I do have a little beef with those kids screaming, "Look, Mickey," at the top of their lungs. I mean, Disney's built for them, not for me. I'm an alien on this planet, and I would have liked to have hidden away in my room, but no one in housekeeping was making it a magical day for me on Monday. I just about wore out the mute button on my mobile phone. Following up, during the last episode, a question from Travel Commons listener Peter Rukavina got us into a discussion about the environmental impact of frequent travel. And since then, I've seen a couple of green flying articles of note. Last week's Virgin Atlantic biofueled 747 flight from London to Amsterdam got a lot of press, as it was meant to. But, biofuel doesn't burn any cleaner than today's sort of kerosene-based jet fuels. Virgin's initiative is more about sustainability than reducing carbon emissions, which actually was Peter's original question. And it was in this vein that actually Air France KLM couched their press release on the purchase of new Boeing 787 Dreamliners. You know, the lead in the purchase announcement was how the retirement of older 747s with newer, more efficient 787s would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And this seems to be a bit of a theme, at least with Air France KLM. digging into their earlier 2005-2006 sustainability development report, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes, they say that an earlier program to replace 747-300s, there you go, all those numbers, to replace 747-300s with 777-300s, has reduced low-altitude hydrocarbon emissions by 35% and carbon monoxide emissions by 12%. Well, I don't know. This seems a lot more tangible than the raft of carbon offset schemes announced late last year by Virgin Atlantic and Continental and SAS. I mean, those schemes feel a bit like conscience, you know, kind of, you know, salves for your conscience, you know, a cheap and easy way to sort of assuage your green guilt. But, you know, rather than, you know, pushing the hard work of carbon emission reduction onto someone else, you know, there are some things you can do yourself. I mean, above and beyond avoiding unnecessary flights, which in our last episode we said most travelers have already done really for personal and or economic reasons, you know, there are some things you can do. You could choose your flight by the efficiency of the aircraft. So back to the Air France KLM example, you know, I mean, different planes, newer planes are going to be more efficient than older planes. Now, this might mean giving up frequent flyer miles or switching programs, you know, to switching frequent flyer programs to fly a more fuel efficient, say, Southwest 737-800 instead of those older United 757s, or heaven forbid, those ancient Northwest DC-9s. I mean, you could also pay a bit more for a direct flight rather than, you know, a one-stop flight, which, you know, I'd recommend anyhow just for personal sanity reasons. But in addition, that, you know, that extra full thrust takeoff is much more polluting than level flight. You could also choose to fly into a secondary, less congested airport, say Ontario in California instead of LAX, one that would allow your flight to take off and land straight away. I mean, a perfect example this week, on my flight yesterday morning from Chicago Midway to Atlanta, from Chicago Midway to Nashville, the plane went straight from the gate to the runway without making a stop. Indeed, I mean, it kind of felt like the pilot was accelerating as he made the turn from the taxiway onto the runway, but, you know, then again, it was a Southwest flight, so really anything can happen. But I mean, when I compare that to my flight this evening from Chicago O'Hare to Newark, I mean, we taxied and sat and taxied and sat for 35 minutes before taking off. Not the greenest situation. I mean, following these strategies can be a bit more convenient than, you know, clicking a checkbox for some carbon offset scheme. But, you know, I do think at the end of the day that they're a bit more effective. Speaking of Southwest, I think that their Business Select program is going to be a winner. Now, this is the program they launched late last year to try and split the difference between business travelers who want assigned seats and, you know, the loyal, diehard Southwest fans who love open seating. So here's how it works. When you buy a Business Select ticket, which is their highest price ticket, and, you know, I don't know, at least $20 to $30 more per leg, more expensive than, you know, than the next run down, You get a spot at the front of the A group, a free drink coupon, and sort of a fractional more rapid rewards credit. Remember, Southwest, they don't go by miles, they go by legs. I wasn't quite up for the free drink coupon on my 6:20 a.m. flight down to Nashville, but I'll tell you, being in position A2, that was the second person in the first boarding group, and not having to remember to check in 24 hours ahead of time to get that spot, I mean, that was great. Because, you know, for last minute travel, actually, this was even better than getting an assigned seat on another airline. You know, there are more than a few times when I've booked a last minute flight from, say, O'Hare to LaGuardia. I seem to be picking on that leg in this show. I'm paying top dollar and I'm getting the middle seat in the exit row if I'm lucky. I mean, all the aisle seats and all the window seats, I mean, they've all been taken, and many of them with folks paying much less than me, but it's because they bought their tickets earlier. But here with the Southwest Business Select program, I mean, I'm still paying more for my last-minute flight, understand that, but at least I'm getting the pick of my seats. And I like that. And, you know, I did manage to bring myself to use the drink coupon on my flight back home last night. 7:30 p.m. seems to be a much more reasonable time to crack a beer. Now, for an update on my rental car experiences, I've been talking in past episodes on really kind of this whole idea about how sort of old and moldy the rental car fleet is getting. Well, how about this one for a comparison? I drive up to the Hertz Gate in Orlando last week in a beat-up Chevy Malibu. The guard looks at the ticket and, you know, checking the mileage. He says, 25,050 miles? Yep, I said. And he just laughed. He said, nothing like a new car. Now, compare that to my Avis rental yesterday in Nashville. I go up to the preferred booth. The guy hands me the keys to a spanking clean Lincoln Mountaineer with 250 miles on it. It was a whole better experience. I mean, the car wasn't, that Lincoln wasn't sticky. It didn't smell. It drove nice. It was great. I'll tell you, I've been using Hertz, well, you know, out of years of habit. You know, they were the first one with the gold program that allowed you to skip the counter and go straight to your car, and that got me sort of connected in with them. And you know, also because I like, they've got a frequent renter program. And you know, last year I probably I think I cashed in enough points for maybe like 3 weekends worth of free rental cars. But I'll tell you, a couple of free weekends just aren't worth a week's of beat up dirty cars that I've endured from Hertz over the past couple of years. And I'll tell you, last week's Orlando rental just broke it. I've switched to Avis. And you know, I also love Avis's emailed receipts. I drop off the car, and before I get to the bus, I mean, heck, half the times before I even get out of the garage, my BlackBerry is vibrating with that e-receipt. And it's great. It's easy to find when I fill out my expense reports and not worried about sort of losing things. And most of the hotels do this now. I think Marriott was the first one, but now Starwood and Hilton do it too. And I've got all these going actually into my Gmail account, which means, you know, I never have to delete anything. And it makes for easy searching months later when our accounting clerks can't find a receipt. And, you know, while I'm sort of here rattling away on updates, no TSA screener, sort of knock wood, has pulled me over for my tooth powder in quite a while. You know, there was a time, and I talked about it on past podcasts, there was a time when I was getting my luggage searched, I would say one out of every three flights, because they thought I was carrying toothpaste. And actually, because Echodent has, you know, printed tooth powder in small words, I usually ended up getting into a, you know, that small print usually got me into a 5-minute discussion about, no, it's actually a powder, not a toothpaste. Well, you know, it feels like the search for liquids, like the urgency around that seems to be lightening up a bit. I mean, they'll still pull you over for something blatant, like a full bottle of shampoo, but you know, I just haven't had some of those just really stupid arguments I was having a year ago about, you know, whether hair wax was a solid or a liquid. Now, you know, I don't know, that they might be getting a little too lax. I mean, on a recent Southwest flight, I was putting my bag up into the overhead compartment, and I found a half full 10-ounce bottle of Pump hairspray. You know, I don't know, I don't know how anybody got that into a quart-sized baggie. Well, anyhow, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts, their stories, their audio comments, the voice of the traveler. The email address, as always, comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can always post them to the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the evolution of connectivity. I was in my home office last week and I wanted to transfer a movie from my home PC to my laptop. I travel with a Lenovo ThinkPad X60S subcompact. It doesn't have a DVD drive or a CD drive, an optical drive, which is fine with me. I just rip the DVDs, off the DVD drive on my home PC, and I compress them either with, say, like DivX or Windows Media Encoder, which, you know, even at high quality takes the file size down to, say, you know, around 1 gigabyte, and then I transfer them over to my laptop, and then I just watch it on the flight off the hard drive. You know, this time though, I was having a little trouble. My home PC and my ThinkPad both have gigabit Ethernet network cards, so I thought rather than taking sort of, you know, the 15 or 20 minutes it takes to move the file over the Wi-Fi network, I'd just sort of zip it over to the ThinkPad 18 times faster, if I do the math right, using the gig Ethernet. My problem was that the Ethernet cable wouldn't fit into the socket. It just wouldn't fit. I mean, what's the problem here? But so after 30 minutes of wiggling and shoving and twisting and shoving, I just picked up the ThinkPad and I looked at the side where the jack was, and I immediately saw the problem. I was trying to plug the Ethernet cable into the modem jack. The network jack is on the other side of the laptop, which got me thinking, when was the last time I actually used that modem? I couldn't remember. And even if I wanted to use it, where would I call? I don't think my ISP, I use AT&T for DSL at home, well, I don't know that they have any dial-up lines. I don't think our company has any dial-up access into our network. I don't know. I don't know what number I'd call, which is quite a change from, say, 10 years ago, when I'd carry a little screwdriver with me just so I could pry the telephone cord out of the back of the analog phones in American Airlines Admirals Club, because programming 9 and then the comma for the pause to wait for the outside dial tone was a whole heck of a lot easier than trying to get those AT&T payphones to take a credit card number. So, I mean, the modem now has become as vestigial as a floppy drive. I mean, is the Ethernet jack going the same way, at least on laptops? When the new MacBook Air was unveiled, you know, everybody was questioning their decision to leave off a DVD drive, but nobody questioned the decision to leave off the Ethernet jack. Of course, you just use Wi-Fi. Now, and then at the opposite end of the price scale, I got one of those little green one laptop per child over the Christmas holiday during they were doing that get one, give one program. And it's a cute little thing. It's got the two little ears that kind of stick up for the Wi-Fi antenna. But that's all there is. It's all Wi-Fi, no Ethernet. All that is a reason why when, you know, the travel news over the past couple of weeks has been dominated by the Delta, Northwest, and United Continental sort of merger dance of the dinosaurs, the news that actually really caught my eye was the announcement that Starbucks is going to replace T-Mobile with AT&T as their Wi-Fi provider. I mean, there are more than a few days when I find myself driving through a city, a meeting here, a meeting there, kind of a series of meetings, all punctuated by stops at Starbucks to load up on caffeine and freshen up my email through the Wi-Fi. And for many frequent business travelers, Starbucks has become, you know, a watering hole, some sort of, I don't know, some sort of new millennium oasis for web Bedouins, those of us working out of our quote-unquote mobile offices. And while there have always been independent coffee houses and regional chains like Caribou Coffee offering free Wi-Fi, no one is as ubiquitous as Starbucks. Now, it's a lot of people who hate Starbucks for that, but for me, traveling around, you know, it's a safe place to land. And the Starbucks partnership with T-Mobile was actually uniquely useful for many frequent travelers because T-Mobile is also the Wi-Fi provider for United and American Airlines airport clubs. So for $19.99 a month, you had all the Wi-Fi you could drink at most of the places that you really needed it. Many would say that Wi-Fi has completely been passed by. It's old hat and is being replaced by cellular data access running over fast 3G networks. Now, I'll tell you, the cellular networks are handy. I use them myself I don't have a I don't have one of the little laptop cards. Actually, I Bluetooth over into my Samsung phone, and certainly that's very handy when you're sort of sitting on an airplane or you can't find a Starbucks. But I'll tell you, if you've got a big whacking PowerPoint file to transmit, a good Wi-Fi hotspot will beat out a 3G card every day of the week. I think the AT&T switch, though, is going to work out all right for me. I mean, with the new program, I guess if I read it right, you'll get 2 free hours a day if you have one of those prepaid Starbucks cards. And I actually have one of their Duetto cards. It works as a Visa card and a prepaid Starbucks card, and it's got some awards that go on one side or the other. Half the time I can't figure it all out. But through that, I think I'm good for the, I think that'll put me good for the free 2 hours a day. And that's way more. 2 hours is usually way more than I use at a Starbucks. I mean, I'm not one of those guys nursing a tall latte watching YouTube on a big MacBook. You know, I'm the guy slamming the double espresso while I'm syncing my Outlook mailbox to get the presentation for my next meeting. I'm in there 15 minutes, 20 if it's a big presentation, which actually is exactly the reason why I think that modems are about as useful anymore as tonsils. I recently had a client email me a 17 megabyte PowerPoint deck. I mean, if I tried to pull that down over a dial-up line on the road, I'd die of caffeine poisoning. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is return of the travel agents. Now, for anybody who can remember back to the days of Web 1.0, when it was novel to buy things over the web, man, okay, so I'm talking about Web 1.0, and the last topic I was talking about dial-up modems. I mean, I am really showing my age on this episode, but let's keep this thing rolling. I mean, if you remember, Web 1.0, the travel agent was the classic example of an industry that was going to be or was being disintermediated by the web, where the web was just blowing up the travel agent's role as being in between the traveler and the airlines. Why would you deal with a person, a third party, when you could book your travel directly with the airline on the web? Well, the answer to that is this. The way airline dependability has just cratered over the past 2 years, when you're dealing with delayed flights or canceled flights, it usually takes talking to a person to get it all straightened out and get you home. I mean, now, if you're dealing with a single carrier ticket, especially one where you've got status, actually, I find you're still okay going direct. I mean, I'm United 1K, and the phone number they give us usually rings directly to a well-trained group of folks in lovely scenic Mount Prospect, Illinois, right in the shadow of Chicago O'Hare and United's corporate headquarters. They can make things happen that no travel agent can. However, on a multi-carrier ticket, I use a travel agent, and a real one with real people that I can get hold of if need be. I used to use Orbitz and Travelocity for these tickets, but I'll tell you, trying to get hold of anyone there live to sort through a problem was damn near impossible. And when I did, they couldn't get anything done. They were poorly trained. I'm talking to them half a world away over a lousy phone line, and they're desperately trying to get me off their phone to, keep their key call center metrics, their average talk time, down to where their target is. So I end up paying now, I pay maybe, 3 times the booking fee to use what you might call a legacy travel agent, someone with an office and with people in my time zone. But it's worth it. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had a ticket that was a United outbound American return flight the same day because I had a goofy meeting schedule. Well, damn if United didn't cancel my flight, that morning outbound flight, and so helpfully booked me on the same flight the next day. So having me fly out after I was already scheduled to return. That's no good. So I managed to scramble and managed actually to book a Southwest flight instead. But now, how to handle this United American ticket and get it all refunded? Because, I mean, certainly they were non-refundable fares, but since United canceled on me because of, I think they claimed weather, I don't have to pay the cancellation fee, but that was going to take some doing. And rather than sort of spelunking around, somebody's website for a half hour or waiting in queue for an overseas call center, I just shot a quick note to my travel agent. And when I landed, I received a very nice note saying that it had all been taken care of. Now, I don't use them for the easy stuff. I mean, I can book a Chicago to San Francisco round trip on, say, United's website in just about the same amount of time as it would take me to give the dates and the times to the travel agent and have them read it back to confirm. I mean, for the easy stuff, the website works fine for me. But I had an itinerary earlier this month, Chicago to Dallas, Dallas to Oklahoma City, Oak City to San Francisco, and then San Francisco back home. Now that one would take a bit more clicking. And, you know, one bad snowstorm or one lost connection, and it all goes bad fast. You know, 5 years ago, airlines were cutting ticket commissions, driving agents out of business. Today, the airlines are cutting service, canceling flights, missing connections, and they're actually helping bring the agents back. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 62. I hope you all enjoyed the podcast and hope you decide to stay subscribed. Better yet, I hope you decide to tell a friend about it. The bridge music on today's show is from Magnatune, the We Are Not Evil label. I don't know how that sets them apart from other labels, but we won't go there. The first song was Indian Blossom by Ruben Van Rompuy, I think is how he pronounces his last name. The second, Afternoon in the Sun by John Williams. There's a very nice, easy name to pronounce. And the last, Arsenal by The West Exit. Check out the show notes for links. You know, in a couple of months, actually May to be exact, we will hit the third anniversary of Travel Commons, which is a complete shock that I'm still doing this. I was thinking of, I don't know, maybe putting together an anniversary edition DVD, you know, I don't know, with all the episodes on it, maybe the pictures off the Travel Commons Flickr stream, I don't know, maybe some bonus features, I don't know, maybe a video podcast, though I don't know what it would be on. Anyway, if this sounds like a good idea to you, or if you've got any suggestions for some special features, drop me a line. If I hear enough demand for it, then I'll do it. Otherwise, I don't know. Maybe I'll just put together a BitTorrent and make it easy for folks to download everything. And where do you drop that line? Well, it's the same place that you send along your stories, your thoughts, your comments, your gripes, the voice of the traveler. Again, text or MP3 files. Send it all along to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, audio files, and to post comments on the website. And remember, we've got the new website on boardingarea.com. Check it out. I actually have been, trying to write a couple of blogs, a couple of blog postings, depending on what I happen to read or what I happen to run into on my travels between podcasts. So check it out. Like I said, just for some quick thoughts that sometimes don't make it into this show. But again, thank you for listening. Thank you for stopping by the Travel Commons. And until we speak again, take care. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer.